This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have three sponsors for the show. The first is Jam Software, who provide ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies such as Macs, iPads, iPhone, and Apple TV in education. More about them at jamsoftware.com. Secondly, Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. Shobi makes it easy to assign, collect, and review student work and provide rich feedback with annotations, voice notes, and more. And finally, Homeroom, the easiest way for teachers to share what's happening in their classroom with students' parents. Upload photos safely to private classroom albums only parents and teachers can see, away from social media and the internet. I'll tell you more about all of those as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you?
It is a beautiful day here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We are... Feels like winter, but it's not yet. We get about a week of fall. So we go straight from 90-degree weather. We get 1 week of in the 60s and low 70s, and then right into it was 19 degrees this morning.
Okay. Well, we're having unseasonably warm this winter. It's barely cold at all. And we've got tickets for the Scotland rugby match, the third of the Autumn Internationals on Saturday, which is the last one of the three game series. Is always the coldest one because it's the deepest into winter. But we're looking at not maybe wrapping up quite so cold as we normally would for this game. So we're looking forward to it. Scotland have actually been playing well recently at rugby, which is, I can see that for the first time in probably about 15 years of watching Scotland play rugby.
I've actually got a rugby ball in my office from our friends at Kirby. They brought me a gift, so... People think it's a football until they get up close to it and they realize, mm-hmm. this is not a traditional football. So it's become the centerpiece of the conversation in my office when people come to visit.
You can just explain it to people as rugby is like American football, except you don't wear a spacesuit to play the game.
Yeah, and it's already, there's been a lot of controversy about the safety of American football. So if you remove the pads, it's... that's a story for another day, though.
I don't know how that conversation isn't being had about rugby as well, because the rules of the game haven't changed all that much since I played at school, 15, 20 years ago. But the size of the players who are playing rugby now, I mean, those rules were developed for people who were sort of amateur players, who were most of the day farmers and a wee bit strong. Now these guys are like Mike Tyson, who can run at the speed of Carl Lewis. And the hits that are going in world rugby now are just enormous compared to what they used to be. So... Yeah, it's frightening to watch sometimes, but good.
So a little bit of follow-up this week. Mm-hmm. One of the things we mentioned last week is that because of the management system in Chromebooks, that you had to buy the Chromebook from a reseller that was then provisioned within your domain from the approved reseller. Mm-hmm. But it looks like we were wrong on that, and there is a special key combination that you can do at the login screen. Mm-hmm. To provision a off-the-shelf Chromebook from Best Buy in your domain name, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. So if you do want to kind of test that, if you be something to try with I got a tweet that mentioned that. So use it at your own risk, I guess. I haven't tried it yet.
I haven't tried that either myself, but I will be trying that over the Christmas holidays and dig into that a little bit. That would be a really good way to – that was one of the complaints I had in the last show was it's not easy to – imagine what that full management experience would be like, but I didn't know about this keystroke you can use at startup. So I'll definitely be digging into that as well. Sounds interesting. We also got quite a lot of feedback from a listener who has some experience dealing with Chromebooks in education, and I thought we would maybe go into some of his key points, Bradley, if that's okay.
It was interesting. We probably got more feedback of this series than... Maybe even the deployment, no, probably not the deployment series. We had a lot of feedback on that, but probably any other kind of range of shows. We had like, it was long feedback. It wasn't even like, hey guys, enjoyed the show. We got like paragraph long emails. So apparently Chrome OS is kind of on people's minds.
I think it very much is. And I think this is also, these are a couple of shows where we've kind of gone beyond our boundaries of really deep understanding, I think, as well. So I think there's more to tell us about what we said that was maybe right or wrong. So it's been really, really useful. So thank you, everybody who sent us that kind of feedback. I think, let me just dig into some points, Bradley, and we'll have a chat about some of them. The first point was about the disposability. You know, we talked about the cost to repair or the process of repairing a broken Chromebook. And what our listener here says, he says, you're absolutely right in believing the Chromebook is a disposable item, or more accurately, a device with finite lifespan. The current policy is to support Chrome OS for up to 5 years from the date of hardware release. Obviously, this is yet to really be tested, but it's largely irrelevant as I suspect no current Chromebook in the market could last 5 years in a school environment. Unlike the tablets, moving parts will be the Achilles heel regardless of the build quality. And as you, meaning us, say, these are no MacBooks. And I kind of agree with that, that I think that probably you're really looking at, you know, hardware death before software obsolescence, really, for these Chromebook devices, particularly if you buy correctly at the start. And I think this is clearly becoming something that's really key to choosing the right Chromebook for your deployment, is you've got to really carefully look at the performance numbers as well. Does that sound fair to you, Bradley?
Yeah, these are one of those areas where we just, you and I don't have enough data over a number of years to know. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've even talked about that with, we feel like that may be changing with the iPad, where could we squeeze that to a 4-year deployment when it's typically been 3 years? Mm-hmm. You know, as this technology evolves and the hardware evolves, you know, could we see longer lifespans? And yeah. I think it'll largely depend on, you know, we look at Chrome OS advancing faster than the hardware can. That'll be a good thing and a bad thing, because if you do see apps like Photoshop that are in the cloud, or maybe a really nice movie editor or some great creative tools, if we start pushing the boundaries of the web and what Chrome OS can do, that's great. Mm-hmm. But then you also might see more inexpensive hardware be left behind, and you probably see that hardware in schools as well. So you may have software that was written to work in schools but not work on the vast majority of Chromebooks that are in schools.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about web-based delivery of that kind of software is that you have very little control over when you move to new versions. Unlike, say you were still running iPad 1 for the sake of argument, you would at least have a set of software installed that would actually still operate on those devices. And you could decide not to ever update that software and it would still function in that way, which is, of course, what many iPad 1 owners are experiencing right now. But with web-based delivery, you get aggressively moved to new versions regardless of whether or not you really want to. So that's something that's probably worth bearing in mind as well. Next point from our listener, he says, if a school standardizes on one manufacturer and a standard screen size, he's talking perhaps, you know, Dell and an 11-inch screen size. So whatever 11-inch Chromebook Dell are selling, this is a question about getting a mixed set as you have to replace broken devices. He says, how much variation are you likely to see? Yes, the new ones are going to be quicker and maybe have a better screen, but he says a bigger concern may be the format of the power connectors. And of course, we've seen that transition from Apple as well. So I think that's possibly a fair comment as well, is that if we're talking about a screen size and a certain set of required connectors, let's say you standardize on having an 11-inch Chromebook that has a VGA connector, you're only going to get better devices as time goes on as well. So that's a fair point that I didn't really bring out in the last show, is that, you know, it's never a bad thing to get a newer device, really, is it? At least from a performance point of view, if not from perhaps a support point of view. But maybe in every 18-month window, you could at least get the same device within that particular window. So that's a possibility too. Next thing was to do with the warranty and replacement costs. And this is a very interesting point that our listener brings up. He says that you're never going to walk down to the local Google Genius Bar and get your Chromebook fixed. And the main reason he says for this is because, in his view, Google are trying to push these devices into emerging markets where maintenance is going to be handled on a more local and ad hoc basis than necessarily a formal manufacturer-supported program. Of course, right now, the big splash for Chromebooks has been US and Australia and New Zealand kind of area. But the key markets really, he says, are India, Russia, Far East and South America, where many people will be able to do these sort of local repairs in the way that we wouldn't bother spending the time to do because of the relative cost, which I think is fair. And my the response I wrote in email, and we talked about this as well, Bradley, was that it's hard for us in Europe to realize that we're not the market that people care about anymore. You know, the US is obviously sort of a cultural leader in a lot of this stuff, but Europe is, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, Europe is basically bust. And we don't have the money that companies want us to have in order to really invest in getting our business, because there's not going to be all that much business, relatively speaking, compared to what countries, developing countries, are going to try and do with their education and technology systems in order to come up to the level of developed nations. So that's a real reality check, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, look, Google's going after the green field and not the brown field. I mean, they're going to go after places where they can be the first device, not a device choice.
which I think is contrary and to the way that I had looked at it before, which was that I had always said, well, you know, Chromebook's a cheaper way to replace your Dell and your Windows stack that you had before. And that may be what happens in European countries, European education systems. But in some ways, it's possible that that's a side effect of the strategy that Google is really trying to do, which is to go for those places where no decision has been made yet, rather than trying to overturn decades of previous practice.
I've kind of stopped trying to figure out Google as much as well, because every time I think that I know what their goal is or what they're doing, they seem like a company that has multiple missions and multiple visions depending on what market they're in, what country they're in. Mm-hmm. And you know, they may have a reason for doing Chrome OS the way they are, pushing the types of hardware they are in the certain countries they are, on these kind of long game visions. I think we always think, well, it's about getting people using Google products. We have these laptops, and then they'll use Google services for life. And that sounds good on paper, but maybe there's another reason. Maybe that's a reason we don't know. Maybe there are products that are coming down the pipe that we're just not aware of, or they have a strategy 15 years out to do X or to move Chrome OS into mobile devices in these countries. You know, have like a offshoot of Firefox OS. I'm just throwing out ideas, but Google plays the long game and not always the focus game.
This is it, and I think that enables them to react to changing circumstances as well, which is a powerful weapon to have. One of the other things that's mentioned in our feedback here is that Google are planning to open up a Play Store for education, and the idea here is that this is going to be a kind of version of the Play Store that's only available to known educationally managed devices, so either Chromebooks or Android tablets that were bought through educational institutions. And apparently there's going to be like professional curation of apps by teachers, which may go some way to allaying fears about data access and so on that we raised in the last show, that there will be a higher degree of moderation and testing for the appropriateness of that tool in the classroom. And I think that's something that Apple could learn a trick or two about as well. Yes, they have an education section in the App Store, but I just had a conversation this week at Parents Night with a parent whose child has dyslexia, and she was asking me, well, what are the best apps for education or for this particular area of education that the child was struggling with? And I said, well, I don't know off the top of my head, but I'll go away and find out. And the place I went was not the App Store, but it was a particular website that I use called I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's appitic.com, Appitic, I think it is maybe. And it's a really good website because there's where a number of Apple distinguished educators have taken iOS apps and broken them down according to various teaching strategies and areas of the curriculum and so on. And it seems like Google are going to do something like that in a sort of walled garden version of the Play Store, which certainly sounds interesting too. So was there anything else in the feedback that caught your eye, Bradley?
You know, I think that, you know, we had Lawrence in another email mentioned that his school is considering iPads, but they're reneging from cost concern to may go with the Windows tablet system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I saw a Surface 3 Pro in the wild the other day. Mm-hmm. And you see that and you think, like, people can – I mean, we make fun of Microsoft for the toaster oven comment that Tim Cook made. Mm-hmm. But there's a part of that that's appealing.
Uh-huh.
If you could get it down to two devices, like your phone and then a bigger tablet/laptop. And it's not so much the hardware perspective of that Microsoft, what they do with Windows 8 is make their Core OS touch enabled, but not necessarily always touch driven.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's the right decision, but that's, I mean, if you said, hey, you need to deploy a Windows deployment, I would probably really have to look at Surface 3 very, very closely at this point.
Yeah, although it would be a strange thing to give up on an iPad for cost reasons and then go for Surface 3. I mean, they're. I'm right in thinking that they're very expensive compared to most other things, you know. So while they are very powerful, the cost reflects that, you know. And I think they're almost like the anti-Chromebook, you know. They're the you know, buy the most powerful thing you can put in a tablet form factor and then do everything on it. I mean, you and I have talked about how the Surface strategy is actually very appealing. It's just the Surface and Windows 8 that's not very appealing. And I think if I could if I could have an iPad that was that powerful and that well specified, I would be very, very interested in that overall. Microsoft's problem has never been ideas. You know, I think Microsoft's problem has quite often just been execution. Do you think?
Yeah, you know, if you could have some sort of Apple device that when it was quote-unquote docked, maybe it was running OS 10, then when you undocked it, it switched to iOS for teaching and presenting and creating, you know, creative aspects on the go or in the field. I don't know. Maybe not. But it sure would be nice to get it down to two devices. Yeah. But really now, you know, it's like there are aspects you can't – like you mentioned before, you can get rid of the Mac, but it's only because – you can get rid of your Mac at home, but it's only because you know you can get access to a Mac at school. Mm-hmm. But there's so many – creative things that you can do on the iPad that just are not feasible on a laptop.
Yeah, I mean, this was a conversation you and I were having about PDF editors and things like that, that many of, and also apps like Explain Everything, where some many of them are actually better than anything you can get on the desktop in terms of their ease of use and the ability to create something of reasonably large scale. So it's an interesting time. I think, you know, the three devices does feel like a transitional period. And I'm not sure what it is that we're still waiting on, but it still feels like something. I mean, iPad Air 2 is very, very powerful. And, you know, what is it here? You know, maybe it is that maybe the future is, you know, I have my iPhone 6 Plus and I have my iPad Air 2 and then I have a Chromebook for legacy desktop tasks, you know, and those desktop tasks are all rapidly migrating over to the desktop web. You know, and maybe actually the desktop web is the legacy web. That's the point that we were talking about last week, is that the way forward. And if you look at some of the recent Ben Evans presentations where he talks about, you know, by 2020, the number of people who will be online and the number of people who have a smartphone will basically be the same number. And all the growth in people coming online will be from people getting a smartphone rather than from getting a desktop web browser. So maybe the future set is a lightweight, cheap, basic laptop for doing your desktop web stuff, and then a really powerful tablet and a really good smartphone, and those being the two kind of workhorse devices, and then the backup device is actually your desktop web browser. Maybe that's the future.
Before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It's Homeroom. Homeroom is the easiest way for teachers to share what's happening in their classroom with students' parents. You can upload photos safely to a private classroom album that only parents and teachers can see. It's away from social media and the open internet. Simple for teachers. You open the app. You can show your parents everything you're doing. Very easy to upload stuff. You can share photos and videos quickly and easily. It's amazing for parents because you can stay informed. You get alerts. You can collaborate. So you can assign other teachers and parents to post to an actual album. It's like if it's a field trip or something like that. You can have a totally private album. So you have conversations. You can add comments and like photos. And again, you can get alerts when teachers post new updates. So here's very easy to make it work. You create an album, you send an invitation to the parents, and you post the photos. It couldn't be easier than that. We were taking a video today of our K-3 students doing a dance with a song they had worked on learning, talking about buttons, and we wanted to send that to the parents. So the teacher said, hey, every time I try to, you know, text this to a group of parents, it always tells me I need to cut it down, it's too long, or it compresses it. And she said, you know, what's the best way to do this? And this is the problem that Homeroom's solving, is it's like when you have something that you want to share quickly and easily, because we don't want to, you know, yeah, we could do a lot of things that building custom galleries on your WordPress website and uploading them, but you know, you just want to do it quickly. Parents want to see it. They want to watch it and be done with it. This is what the problem Homeroom solves. So it gives parents a window into the classroom. It's again, it's private. You can access it through mobile apps or on the web, and parents only get notifications for their kids' class. So like, you know, you won't see notifications for the classes that your kids aren't in. It's built by the team that created Cluster, and which is a best new app in the App Store as picked by Apple. So we'll have a link to Homeroom in the show notes. You definitely want to give it a shot, especially with the holidays coming up. You'll have a lot of class parties. And it's one of the things I didn't get seeing all these parties, the photos before I had kids at school. Now that I have a kid at school, you just love to see what your kids are doing. It's really, really kind of a neat thing. So give Homeroom a shot. Again, it's the easiest way for teachers to share what's happening in the classroom with the parents. But we'll have a link in the show notes at outofschool.net.
Okay, great. So yeah, I really appreciate everybody who sent in feedback on the last couple of shows. It's been really interesting, and I've learned a lot from the feedback as well, and certainly challenged some of my assumptions about the whole issue. So I think, like we said, you know, Bradley, Chromebooks are definitely something to keep an eye on. It's fascinating what's happening. And now with the new generation Chromebooks coming out, which are based on better quality Intel or better or faster Intel processors, let's say, I don't know about quality, but the faster, that should go a long way to relieving some of the performance concerns that I've had in the past about Chromebook, particularly with the two I've owned, the Samsung Series 3 and the HP 11, both of which are really reasonably nicely built Chromebooks, but very slow because they're both based on ARM chips. And I'm looking forward to possibly getting my hands on an Intel-based Chromebook in the near future and trying that out as well.
Be interesting to get a Nexus-style Chromebook where Google really has a hand in it.
Yes, well, I believe that the HP 11 was, at some level, that Chromebook. Because HP had, at one time, they had an 11-inch and a 14-inch model, and the 14-inch model was pretty horrible by many accounts. And the 11-inch is beautifully designed and built, and it's got the chrome light bar on the back of the screen and all those kind of nice little Google-ish touches. And my rumors suggest that there were Google engineers involved in the design of that, or Google designers. So it's an interesting field at the moment. Also very interesting, these Lenovo Chromebooks that are coming out, some of which have got like fold-back screens for kind of movie viewing and things as well. So there's lots to keep an eye on for sure.
So we've done this, I guess, really the past, will this be our,
this, we've is been, our third,
this show in
yeah.
2012, 2013, this will be our third Christmas show. Mm-hmm. This is the show where we talk about some of the cool stuff that we have bought technology-wise for ourselves or for others, or we would like someone to buy us for Christmas. And so we'll have links to all these products in the show notes. These are not affiliate links, so you know, don't feel like you've got to buy them through our show. I probably should set up affiliate links. That would make more sense for us financially. But yeah, you know, these are just cool things that we like and that we wanted to share with you guys that you can ask for Christmas as a gift, or you can buy for the other geek in your life. So I'll start. And okay, mine is something I bought very recently. It's actually a present for my wife for my anniversary. It's the Hi-Rise dock for the iPhone. It's from the company called 12 South, and they make some really, really impressive iPhone and iPad cases. I know they make the BookBook for the iPhone. It looks like an old-style book. Mm-hmm. They've got this incredible dock. It's, again, it's called the Hi-Rise dock that is made for the iPhone 5 and the iPad mini, but it does work with the iPhone 6. But it's a dock that really works regardless of what case you have. So they have different adapters that you can put on when you're actually assembling it. So you actually do assemble this thing, and it uses your actual Lightning cable. So you just use your actual Apple Lightning cable. It doesn't work with the Amazon one because of how snug it is. But then you just have a dock on your desk that works with any case. I have the Apple leather case, works with it fine. It's a great way to charge and store your iPhone when you're at your desk. So again, that's the Hi-Rise dock for the iPhone. And it does work with the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. I haven't used a dock for the iPhone since, I think, the original iPhone, but a big fan of 12 South products. I've had their Book Arc for a while. I don't use it at the moment because of the particular configuration of my desk, but good company. They make good products. My first thing, Bradley, is straightforwardly the iPhone 6 Plus, which I think if you have a smartphone addict in your life, I think it's one of the best things. It's definitely the best iPhone I've ever had, despite early bugs with rotation and things, and most of which seem to be fixed with iOS 8.1.1, I might add, which is very welcome. My wife has still got an iPhone 5, and every time I have to pick up her phone and do something, it feels like an impossibly small toy compared to my iPhone 6 Plus, which now just feels like the way a phone should feel to me. And I've said in the show in the past that I was waiting for Apple to do a bigger iPhone before I got one, and I really could not be happier with it. And in particular, two things that I'm very, very happy with. One is the battery life. We know that the iPhone 6 Plus is a slightly better battery than the 6, but I've been surprised at how much better it's been. And over the past couple of days, I did an experiment. I decided not to charge my phone one night because I'd noticed that every day I was only getting into the high 50s% over the course of one day. And I was able to get two full days of perfectly normal use, no rationing, with one charge on my iPhone 6 Plus. I went to bed at 10:30 the second day, and I still had 5% battery left at that point. So I was kind of blown away by that.
So my next one is the Amazon Basics Bluetooth speaker. And I don't know where Amazon Basics came from, but I am actually thrilled with every kind of Amazon Basics branded product I buy. I have an iPad stand from them. I actually just ordered a little small pouch that's for small electronics that I'm going to keep my bag to keep my HDMI to Lightning adapter and just those kind of things, keep them all organized inside of my laptop bag. But they've got a Bluetooth speaker, and they've got two models, a small one and a large one. The large one runs for $79. They sound fantastic. I mean, a Jambox that's double the cost may sound better, but to me, this sounds like as good as I would ever want it. And it's really, really inexpensive. But they got one for $59 and one for $79. Of course, it's free shipping with Amazon Prime as well. So my next pick would be the Amazon Basics Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah, I love a Bluetooth speaker. I actually went back and looked at the show notes from last year's show, and I recommended a Bluetooth speaker then as well. So I particularly like it for traveling as well. You know, put it up in a hotel room and you're good to go. So, yeah.
They've actually got a product that I linked on toolsandtoys.net today. It's a Bluetooth receiver. So like if you've got a 5.1 stereo system, it actually is a device that does Bluetooth to RCA. Mm-hmm. So if you do have an existing stereo system, it's a cheap way to add Bluetooth with it. And I think it's $24.99.
Yeah, those are quite good. You can also get versions that go to a mini jack, and you can put them into the aux port in your car if your car doesn't have Bluetooth as well. I've seen that done before as well. It's pretty good. My second one is a travel thing too, Bradley, and it's the Anker 5-port USB charger. Now, Anker is spelled A-N-K-E-R rather than Anchor for a ship. But this is the thing. I was given this year as a present, and it's basically a small box, about maybe 150% the size of a matchbox, let's say. And on one end, it's got a figure of 8 power receptacle, and on the other side, it's just got 5 stacked USB ports. And this thing is all you need to take with you when you travel, because, you know, when we travel, I've got my iPhone, my iPad, my wife's iPhone, her iPad, and one of us is usually toting a Kindle at the same time. So one of them, it does the entire hotel room. And of course, as you know, many hotel rooms don't have that many power sockets. And of course, you can plug in any length of cable into the back of that. So you can, when the socket is far away from your bed, you can trail that over to your bedside and plug your stuff in by your bedside. And I think if you have two of the ports in use, they can actually deliver the full 2.1 amps that you need to reasonably quickly charge a tablet device as well. So I'm a huge fan of that. My dad's got one as well. He traveled recently with it, and it's the only thing he took to charge all the devices that they went with, and it did a great job for them. So that's the Anker 5-port USB charger.
Before we move on, let's thank our next sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Shobi. Shobi is an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads. They can then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotation, text notes, and voice notes directly onto the documents. Students can then show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobi from thousands of incompatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shobi's built-in tools. Shobi keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, emails, and push notifications. Now, Shobi Basic is free to try, so teachers can try it out by just going to the App Store and searching for Shobi, or you can go to our website, and we'll have a link to the app as well, outofschool.net. Now, they're also offering a special deal for listeners of the show. You can get buy 5 teachers and get an upgrade for Shobi Pro for an extra 5 teachers. That's a total of 10 teachers for the price of 5. And see all the students, all the teachers in that deal. Visit shobi.com/out of school for more details. Again, buy 5 teachers, get 5 teachers free. This deal lasts for a full year. So if you upgrade today, you'll have that deal till next November. So thanks to Shobi for sponsoring the show this week. Now, my next one is the refurbished Kindle Paperwhite. Now, why refurbished? Because it's $100. And it's actually been on sale in the past couple weeks for $79. So I bought it one Friday for $99. On Monday, it dropped to $79. So they actually gave me a $20 promo. And I think it's fantastic. For $100, you get, to me, looks to be one of the best Kindles ever made. I know they have the new Kindle Voyage, but the reviews have been like, it's fine, but there's nothing. If you have a Paperwhite, it's probably not worth upgrading. It doesn't seem like it's warranting the premium cost, because it's $200. Maybe when it drops to $150, if you can get a refurbished for $150. But my wife and I both have refurbished Kindle Paperwhites, and these are actually the 2013 models. So like, these are not the original Paperwhites that came with the kind of a terrible light. These have the newer lights on them, and I have probably read more in the past 2 or 3 weeks with my Kindle than I have read in the past 2 or 3 years. There's something nice about like having a dedicated device for reading. There's no push notifications, there's no vibrations, there's no nothing. It's just dedicated for reading, and it couldn't be a better experience.
And it's way easier to take the DRM off your Kindle books if you have an actual physical Kindle as well. We'll cut that bit out in post, right?
Well, I never thought I would have bought a Kindle. Like, if you had asked me 2 years ago, like, because I wear the heck out of audiobooks. I have probably 8 audiobooks on my iPhone right now. But I'm finding that, like, my wife and I just don't watch as much TV as we used to, honestly, because we're just exhausted after the kids go to bed. And so time we get them in bed and get the house picked up and get laundry going and get stuff ready for the next day, it's oftentimes really getting time for bed. So love going to bed. We'll just read a little bit, and it's nice. I feel intellectual rather than, you know, watching reruns of House Hunters. You know, read a book.
Read a book. Read something. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the Kindle as well. I've got an original Paperwhite, and even with the kind of slightly dodgy backlight, I still think it's one of the, you know, dollar for dollar nicest things I've ever bought for the price. It's really nice. So my next thing is baggage, which is one of my kind of things. I'm kind of obsessed with that whole topic of carrying things around. I recently got a backpack from a company called Tom Bin. Bin is spelled B-I-H-N. It's a company out of Seattle where they hand make all their bags up there. And the bag I got is called the Synapse 25, which is a 25-liter backpack, which has a number of very nicely made pockets on it. It has, I'm thinking, it's got a large main section, and it's got 6 pockets on the outside as well. And for, to me, this is one of the nicest things I've ever bought. It's up right up there with, you know, the best swivel chairs I've ever bought, the MacBook Air. It's Apple quality, Apple class product making, I really think. And it is so neat and so compact, but at the same time, the pockets inside it are just unbelievably large for what they look like on the outside. So the pattern of the panels on the bag is really, really nice. It's definitely worth checking out. When I first got it, I looked at it and I thought, well, that's just a bag, that's okay. But then I started to fill it and put different loads in it, and I started to realize, well, this thing is really capable, and it can be very compact when it's empty, and it can be very capacious when it needs to be as well. So I bought it with a number of accessories as well, and there's a couple of other bags that they sell. I bought a bag called the Side Effect, which is a little kind of, if you imagine it like a large pencil case, it's made out of ballistic nylon. It has a couple of different pouches, and I use that for I keep things like, I have a private pack of whiteboard markers for school, which I keep that in my bag. So I use it kind of like a pencil case, and keep other things in there, painkillers, headphones, just the little bits and pieces that float around the bottom of your bag all go in there, which is great. And they have a bag called the Snake Charmer, which, as its name might suggest, is for taming all your cables. So I have it right in there. I have USB cables, lightning cables, HDMI cables, just the kind of things you need day to day. And it does a really good job. And it's the nice thing about the Snake Charmer is it's sized perfectly to fit in one of the pockets in the Synapse 25 backpack. There's a pocket across the front base of the bag, and the Snake Charmer fits in there just perfectly. And the last thing, and this is a cheaper product, the Synapse 25 is relatively expensive. It's about $195. But the travel stuff sacks that they make are much, much cheaper. And those are, they're just basically nylon bags with a drawstring top. And I have a couple of those, and one of which I use for charging things. I keep my Anker 5-port charger in there. I keep my MacBook charger in there. And the other one I just use to gather up all those little Apple adapters that you have for USB Ethernet for my MacBook Air, Lightning to USB for microphones that we use when we do the show on iOS, mini DisplayPort adapter, Lightning to HDMI, Lightning to VGA, all the kind of things that a traveling speaker needs to connect their devices to various people's AV systems. So the whole package really works together really nicely. And of course, you can customize it 100 ways from Sunday. They've got great colors and everything. So I'm a huge fan of Tom Bin kit now, even though this is my first bag. It's really holding up very well, and I'm very, very happy with it.
My next item is the Easy Accessory, that's this abbreviated to ACC, so I guess that's how you pronounce it, the 10,000 mAh Brilliant Ultra Slim Dual USB Portable Power Bank. Mm-hmm. So this is about the size of the iPhone 6 Plus, I guess. And what's cool about it is it's got enough juice to charge an iPhone 5 to 6 times. So depending on if you have the iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, it may be similar to that. Or you can charge an iPad with it as well. I think it can charge an iPad mini two times off one charge. So one of the has dual USB. One of the ports is the 2.1, and then port two is 1.5. So you could do like two iPhones or an iPad and an iPhone. Once it's charged up, it'll have 6 months of standby time as well. You got all kinds of different colors. This is like an awesome thing to just stick in your bag when you travel. You may not need it, but you know, if you get in a situation where you don't have power for extended periods, again, on a plane, on a train, this would be just a great device to have. And we'll mention another one later that's a little smaller. But I mean, again, with this one, if you were on a, you could go camping for 2 to 3 days and easily keep your devices charged. So it's $23.99 on Amazon right now. It'd be a great stocking stuffer. So it's again. Now, what does MAH stand for?
Milliamp hours.
Milliamp hours. So it's 10,000 milliamp hours. So they actually have one that's 20,000 as well. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit bigger, and it's you know, I guess double the price. So maybe for since it's I might get two of the smaller ones if you really needed that much. But so again, it's we'll have a link in the show notes. But it's 10,000 milliamp hours, a portable battery with dual USB. But the cool thing is that one of the USB ports can charge an iPad.
Yeah, I've used those in the past. I actually recently replaced. I had two. Juice packs. One was about 3,000 milliamp hours and one was about 6. And I just recently replaced both of those with an anchor unit, which is 13,000 milliamp hours. There's benefits and drawbacks either way, but I only carry the anchor one on a daily basis because it's smaller now and it's newer, so it's more compact. But there are advantages to buying more than one of those because, say, you are on a camping trip or something like that. What you can do is if you have two, you can put one wherever your charging facility is and leave it there while you take the other one away and use it to charge your device on the move and then swap them over. You can swap them in and out and have one charging and one being used to charge your devices as you go around. So there are real benefits to buying more than one small one rather than buying the biggest one you can possibly get.
And I'm a bigger fan of having these external bricks versus having the one built into the case because all it is you're carrying a battery you may not need every day. And I don't need these things daily, but you know, if I'm gonna be out of the office for the entire day, having to use my phone a lot, or again on camping trips and things like that, they're just handy to have in a pinch.
Yeah, I mean the argument for using one in a case is if you live somewhere where the cellular signal is so weak that it causes your battery to drain very fast every single day of your life, then it makes sense to keep it in a case. But the problem with case-shaped batteries is that obviously it's completely dependent on the form factor of the phone. And when you get a new phone with a new design, you're going to also have to buy a new battery. Whereas these external bricks, they're not so convenient to charge your device with, but maybe you don't need that every day and they're just there for backup. And of course, they will last much longer and they will also charge other devices as well. Of course, you can charge your Kindle from it. You can charge your Bluetooth headphones and different things as well. So big fan of the external brick rather than the case. Right, my next one is a book, actually. It's a book called Visible Learning by John Hattie, which is a very interesting book, which I will confess I have not finished yet because it's fairly lengthy. But what it is it's a meta-study of many different kinds of educational interventions that you can put in place in your school. And what the author's tried to do is he's tried to rate the effectiveness of each of these interventions. And these might be things like having a school uniform or not, what difference does that make to learning? Having a long lunch hour versus a short lunch hour, or doing homework versus not doing homework, having more teachers in the classroom versus one teacher and different things like that, and a school environment, using IT or not using IT and so on. And it makes for very interesting reading because some of the things that we think of as, well, that's fundamental to it, to improving education, like small class sizes, is actually shown not to be the most effective thing that you could possibly do. So it is a very interesting read, and it's something that I'm trying to take to heart as we try and design new ways of doing school and things like that to try and use some of the ideas out of that book to guide our efforts and guide our investment really to the places where it's going to be most effective.
I'm just looking at that book on Amazon right now, and you can buy it on Kindle for $31 or you can rent it for $9. I did not know you could rent books on Kindle. You can do 30 days for $9, 60 days for $11, 90 days for $13, or 120 days for $14. I just have never seen that. When could you, I guess this is something because it looks like a like a textbook almost.
Yeah, I think that might be a US only and academic books only thing. I've certainly not seen that on the UK Amazon store yet, but yeah.
Hardcover is $115.
Yeah, it's definitely a professional text, but it's pretty compelling, some of the things that they show.
Before we move on, let's thank our last sponsor of the night. Fine folks at Jamf Software, they have been a long-time supporter of the show. So if you're looking for a management system for Apple products, the Casper Suite from Jamf is what you want to take a look at. They provide IT staff with tools and technologies that allow you to manage, deploy, and maintain Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in your school or in your business. They have a great app for schools called Casper Focus that goes on a teacher's iPad that allows them to quickly gain students' attention. They can conduct secure exams within an app. They can select a specific Apple TV. They can choose and distribute iBooks. And they can even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. Again, this is an app for the teachers on the teacher's iPad. So learn more about Jamf Software and all it can do for your deployments. Go to outofschool.net, and they got a special URL that you can use, and that lets them know that they that you came to them from our show. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week. My next one is actually a book, and probably a lot of you are going to roll your eyes when I tell you this book, and you're going to think, nope, not reading that, probably unsubscribing from the show, depending on how your political views line up. It is 41, A Portrait of My Father. It's by George W. Bush, about his dad, George H.W. Bush. So 2004 was the first presidential election I ever got to vote in. And one of the things I am interested in is, as we've gotten further away from the first Bush presidency and the Clinton presidency, you get a different perspective on their performance. Mm-hmm. You see things, when you're in their 4-year, 8-year term, you focus on little things, but when you get 10 years away from it, you have a different perspective on it. And, and I'm wondering how we'll feel about George W. Bush's presidency 20 years from now, and how we'll look at Barack Obama's presidency from 20 years from now, because, there are a lot of critics of both presidents. And one of the things I've noticed is that in this 24-hour news cycle is that people think the president of the United States is the king, and he's not, and they just can't do everything that you think they should. So if the economy is bad, the president can't fix that overnight. But it's just not the way our government works. Mm-hmm. And so this book is a book, again, by the second George Bush, about his dad and about his dad's life, his dad's presidency. And it's just very interesting because, I was like in elementary school when the first Bush was president. And so some of the things they're referencing, I remember, but I didn't remember living through. So it's very interesting to me to kind of hear this. And the audiobook's great because George W. Bush narrates it. So you kind of almost feel like he's telling stories about his dad. So regardless of how you felt about his presidency, whether you voted for him or you didn't, that doesn't matter here. It's just an interesting book about his dad's life. And I think, it's a great gift to give a dad, is you wrote about his life. And so it's a really, really cool book. Again, if you like audio, I really recommend the audio because the author does read it. So it's called 41, A Portrait of My Father. 41 is referencing that he is the 41st president, or was the 41st president of the United States. So USA, USA, USA. Hashtag.
There we go. Okay. So if there's anybody still listening, I'm going to talk about an American-made tool. At least I think it's American. I have this I've used a pen knife for many years, and I believe that I recommended a different pen knife in the last show, but the one I'm using at the moment is the Leatherman Style PS. And what's interesting about this one is not only is it absolutely tiny, which is really helpful. I was shocked when I got it. When you look at something on Amazon, you think, well, you sort of imagine the size it is, and then it comes to you and it's either bigger or smaller than you thought. I've got a funny story about that in a minute, if you remind me. This is a, the classic Leatherman style of the butterfly handles and the pliers inside. But the thing about the Style PS that's really great is that it doesn't have a knife blade in it. And the reason for this is that it's travel friendly. So it has scissors, a file with a little screwdriver in the end. It's got tweezers and the pliers and different bits and pieces, but it doesn't have an actual knife blade. So it's generally considered to be TSA compliant, if you like, and you can fly with it as well. Because one of the reasons I didn't really want to carry a big pen knife was because I knew that eventually one day I would get to some place in security where I would forget that I hadn't checked it in my bag, and I would eventually lose it, and it would be a you know, an expensive thing lost. But the Style PS is both very small, very compact, and also not very expensive, but it's got me out of a whole lot of different jams over time. So it's really great. And if you are getting it for somebody, I would recommend you give it to them maybe the day before Christmas, because those little scissors are incredibly handy for cutting off all those maddening little wire ties that all your children's toys come with, which is pretty much how I spend about the first 4 hours of every Christmas morning, is just cutting things out of cardboard boxes now. So that's the Leatherman Style PS, sort of keyring size Maltese tool without a knife blade.
I mean, are you a big fan of like seeing those websites where people explain what they carry every day? Because I love those things.
The only thing I like better than that is YouTube videos of people packing a backpack, which I could just watch them all day. I love that.
Like, yeah. I really feel like if you ever leave education, you'll be working for a company that makes backpacks. I mean, that seems inevitable. Yeah. So you have a bag podcast where you just rant on bags.
Yeah.
My next item is the Jaybird Blue Buds X Sport Bluetooth headphones. So these are $132 on Amazon. These are something I am planning on buying myself. If I get Christmas money from someone, maybe with my Christmas bonus or something. These are $132 on Amazon. They're supposed to be fantastic. We link to these on the Tools and Toys Christmas catalog. Sean Blanc has these and swears by them. And they use a, you know, I've been looking at like the Power Beats too, because I'm an Apple fan. So, and you've seen the LeBron James commercials, you just really have to buy those, right? Like, is that, I mean, that's what we're supposed to do.
It's in the terms and conditions, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Tim linked to the commercial, my buddy Tim Cook.
Yep.
And I've been reading about those, and like, because they're $199, I'm like, those look neat. I mean, probably they sound pretty good, right? And like, the more I'm reading about it, people are saying like they're great for music, but they don't do well with video. They say they lag. And I've read that on multiple reviews. Like, that's weird. That's interesting. Huh. So I've been looking at these headphones, and they use the new custom written compression software. So it supposedly sounds better than normal Bluetooth headphones. So I'll be picking these up hopefully after Christmas. But again, that's the Jaybird Blue Buds X Sport Bluetooth headphones. And I actually did just order myself the Amazon Basics headphones, like the over-the-ear ones. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know why I did it. Like, I think my youngest son was kind of being really cranky last night. So my oldest son, when he's 4, has like a $5 pair of headphones that honestly look like Beats knockoff that he like will put on sometimes if he wants to use his iPad and we're watching something on TV. And I just needed not to hear my son whine, my 16-month-old. So I put those headphones on and put on an audiobook. And I thought, this is interesting. So it's like sounded really good. And so then I played music and I realized these $5 over the ear headphones sounded better than pretty much any earbud I've listened to recently. And really all I use is the AirPods. And then I realized like over the ear headphones probably just sound better overall because they're bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so speakers, I ordered the Amazon Basics $15 over the ear headphones. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, no, I actually have a number of different headphones. The ones I use for podcasting that I'm wearing right now are Sennheisers, which cost about £30 from Amazon, and they're super solid and they work great. I have these really expensive Bose noise-canceling headphones that I use for travel, which my only regret on those, and I recommended these on the show last year, was that I didn't buy them 10 years before because it just transforms the experience of flying if you have noise-canceling headphones. It's fantastic. I also use it when my wife puts on the washing machine, and you flip them on. I don't even have them plugged into anything, but you flip them on, you can't hear the washing machine anymore. It's the best.
I want every pair of headphones I see. Like, I really want a pair, because the kicker when you travel, like, I would love Bluetooth, but then that's something else to charge, and it really, I guess, probably uses your phone's battery more. So, like, I think I would like, in a perfect world, I would like an incredible pair of wired headphones that are over the ear. Then Bluetooth, I just want 4 pairs. So someone needs to buy me 4 pairs of headphones, like the best earbuds, Bluetooth wired, over the ear, Bluetooth and wired. So somebody should buy that for me.
Well, I literally do that. I have I've got a pack of the Apple earbuds that I keep in my bag. I have a Plantronics Bluetooth headset, which I don't like very much. I'll tell you why in a second. I also have the Sennheisers that I use for podcasting and the Bose noise-canceling ones that I travel with. One thing I've noticed about Bluetooth headphones is that you have to be aware of which ear the Bluetooth radio is on, because on my Plantronics ones, it's the left earpiece that is the Bluetooth receiver, and I have my iPhone in my right pocket. And sometimes that can actually, the signal can be interrupted. Just whatever way you position your body, if I bend over and there's more of my body between the headphones and my phone than normal, it can actually interrupt it. So quite often I have to move my phone into like a jacket pocket or left on the left-hand side of my body in order to get a good reliable Bluetooth signal. So it's worth just checking which side of those headphones you can, and use our standard trick of, you know, search for the PDF manual on the internet. Quite often they'll mention you'll get better reception if you keep it near the left one or the right one, depending on the way the headset is built. So that's something that's quite important to know, I think, because these things, obviously, they've got such a small battery in them that they're not all that powerful. And I've noticed a few interruptions with my Plantronics ones because my phone and the headset are on opposite sides. Pro tip. Let me stick on my next thing, Bradley. One of the things I love is being paperless. And the way I do this is I have a Canon mobile scanner, which I don't use it mobile, it just lives on my desk, but I like it because it's small, physically small. And mine is the Canon P150, but that's not made anymore. The current one is the P208, is the entry-level mobile scanner. Canon also make desktop scanners, but the mobile one is the one I like. And for me, this is super important because what I do is I just drop in everything I get into that. It's almost like an inkjet printer. You drop things into the hopper at the back and they scan out through the front, scanning both sides at once. And then that turns it into a double-sided PDF. And it's really, really nice. And obviously they all go straight into Evernote, where it's indexed for searching and so on. So a document scanner for the nerd in your life who wants to go paperless is awesome. I like the Canon P series, but obviously Evernote have got a desktop scanner as well of their own making, which is, along with everything else in the Evernote market, hideously expensive, but it is considered to be one of the better ones for working with Evernote, although there's no problems. The Canon Capture software actually works perfectly with Evernote as well, so there's no problem there.
Speaking of Evernote, we had the big 6.0 update for the Mac version came out today.
Oh, really? I didn't click that yet.
Yeah, it's the kind of matches the new web UI. It's a very white background. The only thing I don't like is the notebook view. It looks terrible. But other than that, I am a big fan of it. It feels fast. It feels like some of the performance improvements they've been talking about have finally really come to fruition. So my next item, and it's my last one, it's the leather iPhone 6 and 6 Plus case. I love the 6 and 6 Plus design, but like it honestly to me is a little slippery. And the black leather case for my iPhone 6 is by far the best case I've ever used. It's very thin, adds just enough grip to it. I know it's a little bit more of a premium over some other cases on Amazon. You'll have to buy it again directly from the Apple store or your local Best Buy. But I think it's fantastic. So if you're looking for a case for your new iPhone, I recommend the black leather iPhone 6 case.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I've got the same case, so mine's blue rather than black, with the white phone in it. And yeah, I completely agree. I never used the case on my iPhone 5 or either of my 4 or 4S, but I think something to do with the aluminium back and also those rounded corners does feel a little bit more like a bar of soap in your hand. And I couldn't be happier with it. If you've used the Apple leather case for the iPhone 5 and earlier, this one's actually much nicer. It's not as kind of hard. There's a little bit more give to the leather, so it's really nice, and it ages very nicely already in the hand. So next thing I want to mention, Bradley, is two keyboards, two Bluetooth keyboards, one for the desktop and one mobile. And the desktop one is the Logitech K760 keyboard, which is, I'm not sure it's the most current version. There may be a newer one than this out. But basically what it is it's a Bluetooth keyboard with a solar panel just above the top row of keys. And this solar panel just works from room lighting or whatever, and it's enough to keep the keyboard charged all the time. And it works really well. The party piece for this keyboard, though, is that it has three separate Bluetooth pairing profiles. So if you have a MacBook Air, an iPad, and an iPhone, you can potentially pair this keyboard to all three of those devices. And with one button on the keyboard, it will just switch its Bluetooth from one to the other. So say you've got your iPad and your MacBook open and you're typing on the keyboard, you just hit the button and suddenly the keyboard's paired to your iPad. You can type, 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 and then hit the button and it's paired back to your Mac again. So it's a really cool trick, and I've been using that keyboard for about a year and a half now and really happy with it. The other keyboard I was going to mention is actually not out yet, but it, it's based on a keyword I've already used, and that keyword was fantastic. And it's called the Logitech Keys to Go iPad keyboard. And it's basically the same keyboard that is in the Logitech Fabric Skin Folio iPad case, which I've been using for about 6 or 7 months now. And I'm a huge fan of that keyboard. It's one of the few keyboard cases that I've continued to use for longer than about an hour, which is how long it normally takes me to hate an iPad keyboard. But this is basically a standalone Bluetooth version of that same keyboard mechanism, not built into a case, but just separate. And it's really, really small. It's the same physical size. So it's less than the outline size of an iPad. Very, very thin. And it's also sort of rubberized and sealed so that it's splash-proof and stuff as well. So it's available for pre-order already, I think, on the Logitech website. And I think it's coming out anytime now, this month or next month. And it looks like a really nice thing.
Yeah, that I think I'll have to pick up that keyboard. That looks very interesting to me. It looks like something to keep in your bag. You may not use it every day, but the images were like they're spilling coffee on it. That kind of sells me on it.
Yeah, and it will survive being in your bag as well, I think, which is really nice. I've got one more thing, Bradley, to round up.
And I think this is probably the coolest one of the show.
Yeah, this is something I've been playing with recently, although I haven't got this exact kit, but this is the one that looks actually good. I have on my desk here a couple of Bluetooth eye beacons, which I bought from Amazon because they were basically the only ones I could get on the Amazon UK store. And these were about £10 or £12 each. But the ones I'm recommending based on reviews than based on my own experience is the Estimote Bluetooth Beacon Starter Kit. And what this is $99, and you get either two or three Bluetooth beacons from Estimote they have a much nicer management system than other beacons. So these ones I've got are from China. There is an app you can use, but the app basically requires you to dig through a whole series of unexplained hexadecimal fields and then type in hexadecimal how you want to reconfigure these devices. Whereas the Estimote ones actually have a decent app with a proper management system and a way that you can actually deploy a Bluetooth beacon system at scale. Now, reasons you might want to be interested in this, particularly if you're an iOS admin using the Casper suite, I think we've mentioned this before in the show that Casper 9.6 has got support for using iBeacons as a way to communicate with iPads and make iPads do things based on MDM protocols. Two examples. One is you can use the presence or absence of a Bluetooth beacon to either apply or remove a configuration profile to a device. My test case for this, which I'm still trying to actually make work because these Bluetooth beacons are so hard to configure, is I want to put a beacon in the boys' toilets, and anytime Andy walks in there with an iPad, they will get a profile that turns off the camera for the duration of them being in the toilets. And as soon as they go out of range of this beacon, the profile should reappear. So I'm still working on that little project. But the Estimote ones, I'm actually probably going to buy myself an Estimote kit quite soon because I think that the time I'm wasting trying to get these Chinese beacons up and running, you know, has probably cost me more than $100 of time already, which I could have saved if I'd just gone for the Estimote ones to start with. The other thing you can do with beacons, I don't know if you clocked this as well, Bradley, is that you can use the presence of a beacon as a trigger to make an iPad upload its inventory to your MDM server. This is really cool. Yeah. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, so you could trigger that, like put them near your exits.
Yep.
And then you'd know at the end of every day your inventory would be up to date. Oh, that's... Yep. See, that's a use of iBeacons. We always talk about them being like creepy in a way, but like that's a legitimate use. Like you're not trying to like track people for nefarious purposes. Like that's just a really cool thing. Imagine in the future if you could like somehow trigger like, I don't know, iCloud backups when they walk in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Or when they walk into the lunch hall or something like that, somewhere where the device is not going to be used because of its context, or in your gymnasium, you know, where the device is probably just sitting in a bag for a couple of hours. You know, use that to kick off certain things. Other examples I've seen from Jam for things like deploying an AirPlay configuration to people who are in a particular room so that you only see the particular Apple TV that you're close to. That's one way of using it. The other one you could use to set up printers and things as well if you get close to the printers, that kind of thing. So there's some pretty cool uses of these that I want to kind of get into trying a bit more of in school. But first of all, I need a much more manageable Bluetooth beacon set than these ones that I've got here. And the Estimote platform looks really nice. They also have essentially they're trying to do a sort of cloud controller approach or a cloud managed approach, much more like the Aerohive Wi-Fi, where you can sort of configure your beacons using a website and set them all up. And then what happens is that those configurations are downloaded to your smartphone, and then you walk around your facility, and just as you sort of wave your phone at these beacons, the beacons will take that new configuration from your phone and they will be updated. So you can actually kind of roll out standardized configurations to your beacons just by sort of walking past them with your smartphone, which seems like a pretty clever way to do it. If you want to scale out a beacon deployment, that Estimo look like they're building a really nice platform for some of that stuff.
Well, you know, I feel like we're at the cusp of a lot of this like very cool stuff. And I think this is where being able to like be a visionary, but also being like grounded at the exact same time is very key for people in our profession. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've kind of often said that we underestimate what we can do long-term, but overestimate what we can do short-term. And I think, you know, especially as we talk about battery life and, you know, overpowering access points and things like that, like this is some cool stuff. Like we could really, it's like if this, then that in real life.
Yeah, exactly. And you can start to see ideas where that could be part of the whole program as well. You know, proximity means this and then that and then that and then something else. You know, so if you can have your device, you know, roll in, update its inventory, and then, you know, what would be really cool actually is if you could connect your Casper to IFTTT and get emails, you know, and different things based on stuff that's in your Casper API as well. That would be really cool. Maybe we should bug the Casper people to try and connect Casper to IFTTT, and then we can make the lights go on every time somebody runs over 75% on their storage used on their device or something like that. Yep.
Well, you know, I think a lot of stuff's, you know, I always love this show because I feel like I find the same stuff everybody else would, or I'm wanting the same stuff, but like some of your stuff is, I'm like, I would have never found that otherwise. So I know what I can link to on Tools and Toys for the rest of the week.
I'm glad to have helped out in that.
So I have to pass on some affiliate revenue. No, I'm kidding. that's all I've got. Do you have anything else that you want to mention on your Christmas wish list?
Yeah, no, the only thing, and this is, I'm going off script here, but the only thing I'm thinking of is I was looking at the Intel Chromebooks. We mentioned them, obviously, in the Chromebook section of the show. The one I'm looking at right now is the Dell 11-inch Chromebook with an Intel processor in it. That's going for about £200 ex-VAT in the UK at the moment. So I'm looking at possibly picking up one of them for Christmas. Although the better one of the two, the 4GB RAM version, is apparently very hard to get. So the 2GB RAM version is actually, you know, 24-hour shipping, but the 4GB one is back ordered. So I'm curious about that product as well. That might be the Intel Chromebook that I eventually buy to get a better handle and better performing Chromebooks as well.
What we want is like that Pixel. What was the high end Chromebook? The Pixite.
The Chromebook Pixel.
Yeah, Pixel. We want that. That costs like $200. Seems fair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the Pixel is actually kind of interestingly outdated now. It's actually quite an old model, and it hasn't been refreshed in any way since it first shipped. I would love to know how many of them they've actually sold. I bet it's really not very many. But I do know a couple of people who do have them. Ian Bettridge and Ben Thompson both, I think, have Chromebook Pixels. And they rave about them. They genuinely say this is an Apple-grade machine. It's beautifully built. It's really lovely. And, of course, it is Apple pricing, so you should expect that. But it's one of the few. It's interesting that there haven't been more premium Chromebooks so far, that they're mostly all clustering around the low end. But it'll be interesting to see how that develops over time, you know, when you get into a situation where schools maybe are going Chromebook and the IT staff and the teachers and the management actually want a better experience, but they want the same platform, will there be a case for, you know, $500 or $600 Chromebook, which could be made actually very nicely at that kind of price, particularly from somebody like Lenovo probably. So we'll keep our eye on that too. And I'll let you know if I ever go and drop 200. I mean, 200, right? That's crazy. You know, I sort of feel guilty about having gone through two Chromebooks now, but you know, I'm thinking, well, it's not a lot of money to get good experience in that field. And now that you can get Intel-based ones for a couple hundred pounds as well, it's definitely worth keeping up, I think.
That'd be an interesting spring to watch. I'm always tempted to go in there and, like, you know, buy, I want to buy, like, four of them just to try. I wish I could have, like, a rental program. Like, let me give you $100 a month and just try a bunch of Chromebooks.
Well, yeah, I think they have this Chromebook lending library thing that they're taking around universities, and I would love to, you know, for them to have one in like London, Edinburgh, and Glasgow, and just to be able to, like, Microsoft have this actually. They have a sort of customer center in Edinburgh, and they have sort of one of everything that they have, they make in there, and installations of all their major server size stuff as well. And you can sort of go in there and play around for a while. And I think, you know, not having a Microsoft store, that's the next best thing. And it'd be really cool if Google had something like that as well. You know, somewhere you can just go and play with all the Chromebooks and see which ones are powerful enough or whatever. Maybe soon.
So I guess we'll wrap it up there for this week. Again, thanks to our sponsors, Champ Software, Shobi, and Homeroom. If you want to learn more about them, go to outofschool.net. Thanks for everybody listening this week. If you find something you want for Christmas, that's awesome. That's the reason we do the show, trying to, you know, talk about some of the cool things that we found over the past year. I am Bradley Chambers on the Twitter, so if you want to like to follow me, and I am chambersdaily.com on the internet.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web, and links to both of our respective Amazon wish lists will be in the show notes, I'm sure. Hint. Yeah, good luck with that. Okay, we'll talk to you all next week.